I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Biden and the border. The president is set to address the surge of migrants into the United States. We're at the White House. Abortion in America. Lawmakers take a closer look at pro-life laws enacted since the overturning of Roe versus Wade. Fidelity Month. Learn more about Professor Robert George's campaign to strengthen our faith in families. And Masters of Mysteries. Learn more about a gathering in Ireland dedicated to the Rosary. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Joe Biden announces new measures to control the southern border. It comes as the White House tries to neutralize immigration as a political liability ahead of the November elections. But his plan has drawn immediate criticism from Republican rivals, and even some of the president's supporters question the move, hoping to keep the border policies humane. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, the immigration debate includes a tragic human toll. Listen to this. The U.S. Border Patrol reports an increase in deaths due to heat and dehydration among migrants attempting to cross the border illegally. El Paso, Texas, temperatures there hovering at more than 100 degrees.
President Joe Biden speaks to the nation about the crisis on the southern border.
We must face the simple truth. To protect America as a land that welcomes immigrants, we must first secure the border and secure it now.
And the president reveals more details about his plan to limit the flow of migrants.
Migrants will be restricted from receiving asylum at our southern border unless they seek it after entering through an established lawful process.
The White House says Biden's executive order will shut down asylum requests once the number of daily encounters at the border hits 2,500. Under the current wave of immigration, the new order would go into immediate effect. The Trump campaign, quick to respond, writing, "Crooked Joe Biden is only pretending to secure the border because he's tanking in the polls," adding, "On November 5th, the American people will deport Crooked Joe Biden from the White House once and for all." Democratic Representative Pramila Jayapal, who normally supports Biden, also criticizes the plan, calling it extremely disappointing. She tweets, "Democrats cannot buy into cruel enforcement-only measures that have failed for 30 years. We need real, humane reform that expands legal pathways. Victims of human trafficking and unaccompanied minors would be exempted." But another Democratic lawmaker blames Republicans for the chaos on the border.
Republicans said they want legislation. Then when they had the chance to support legislation, they said no. Republicans said Joe Biden should act unilaterally. And when Joe Biden acted unilaterally, Republicans said no. It is very clear what the Republican position is. They do not want the border fixed, period. Stop.
Now, tonight, President Biden is scheduled to host lawmakers for a congressional picnic before heading overseas to France. That's where he plans to mark the 80th anniversary of D-Day that helped the Allies win World War II. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, for more, let's bring in Tony Payan, director of the Center for U.S. and Mexico at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Tony, good to have you on the show. First, your reaction to this executive order and the timing of it. Why now?
Well, first of all, I think it shows that the Biden administration understands that immigration and the border with Mexico is going to be the number one issue in the fall campaign. There was an agreement between Democrats and Republicans in the spring. The Republicans defeated their own negotiated bill because they certainly wanted to keep that issue for the fall campaign. And the Biden administration entered into a degree of desperation, so to speak, to get that off the headlines. So that's important for the Biden administration to be seen as tough, to be seen as dealing with immigration on the border. That's, I think, the main reason. The second is Mexico had elections on June 2nd, on Sunday, and I think the Biden administration knew that the outcome, to a certain extent, was going to be influenced by Washington's actions. He didn't want to give the López Obrador administration in Mexico or his campaign the nationalist card to play, so to speak, and so they waited until after June 2nd, once the Mexico election was resolved, so that it wouldn't become a political issue in Mexico and the campaign there.
And Tony, what type of impact do you think this will actually have at the border?
Well, I think it's going to be relatively low if Mexico continues to detain migrants in transit within Mexican territory, continues to deport them very quickly, or continues to retain them at the southern border. Not very many of them are going to make it to the northern border. I know that there are some numbers that people say that migrants are not coming to the border in the numbers that they were. Honestly, they're quite high. I've just recently looked at the numbers, and they're still very high, several thousand migrants a day. Fewer than that are being allowed into the United States, and now the Biden administration is acting to allow even less or fewer migrants into the United States. Will that mean that the United States can more expeditiously deport migrants back into Mexico or detain them and deport them? That depends on Mexico. It depends on how many Mexico lets through. It depends on how many resources the Biden administration can deploy in addition to those that they have to process that they let in as quickly as they can, and then how fast they can deport them from the border. I think it's going to make a difference, but honestly, a lot of it depends in coordination with Mexico.
Yeah, and have we had any reaction from Mexico about this announcement?
The only reaction from Mexico is, of course, some concern that the Biden administration will undertake a summary deportation of migrants back into Mexico without the ability of processing them into the United States and without a binational plan to deal with those populations. I recently was in Ciudad Juarez across from El Paso, Texas, and I can tell you that the shelters there are full. A lot of migrants are waiting for their time to get into the United States. I went through the airport in El Paso. You can see a lot of these migrants being helped by the Border Servants Corps, organized by the Lutheran Church and Catholic Charities, and they're certainly processing migrants through the airport in El Paso and other airports along the border. But then again, you know, I think the Biden administration knows that this has to stop if they want to win the elections in November. They're going to do everything they can to at least show that they're doing something.
All right, we're going to leave it right there. Tony Pion of Rice University, thank you so much for your insights. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
From the White House to Delaware, where the president's son was in court as opening arguments began in his federal gun trial. The prosecution used audio excerpts from Hunter Biden's memoir to make their claim that he knew what he was doing when he lied on federal forms to purchase a firearm back in 2018. Jurors also had a chance to see the paperwork at the center of the case. Biden's attorneys say their client did not think he had a drug problem when he filled out the paperwork. The president's son is charged with three felonies. He has pleaded not guilty. During a hearing before the House Judiciary Committee, Attorney General Merrick Garland pushed back on Republican accusations that the Justice Department targeted former President Trump and his allies.
These repeated attacks on the Justice Department are unprecedented and they are unfounded. These attacks have not and they will not influence our decision making. I will not be intimidated. And the Justice Department will not be intimidated. We will continue to do our jobs free from political influence, and we will not back down from defending democracy.
His appearance came as Republicans have moved to hold him in contempt for the Biden administration's refusal to hand over audio of President Joe Biden's interview with special counsel Robert Hur, which focused on the president's handling of classified documents. Well, in the 2 years since the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade, 41 states have enacted some type of pro-life laws restricting abortions. Today, Democrats led a hearing looking at the impact of the abortion bans. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with that story. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, it was a rather civil hearing today. Both pro-abortion and pro-life witnesses sat side by side at the hearing today, and they told their stories. Lawmakers also lined up with opposing sides on the abortion issue. But pro-abortion Senator Patty Murray says that since the overturning of Roe, abortion bans have created a health care nightmare.
In states with extreme abortion bans, we are seeing health care providers closing their doors and shutting down their practices, new doctors staying away, and fewer options for patients to get a whole range of necessary health care services.
Louisiana pro-life Senator Bill Cassidy used fetal illustrations to make his point.
This is a life. Does anyone say that that child is not a life? How could you not? I'm a doctor. I see that you have to take care of that mama. You have to take care of that mama. But you have to recognize that there is another life there as well.
But a Texas abortion patient told her story of having to go out of state, spend nearly $3,000 to get an abortion, and feared losing her job.
I am one of thousands of people that have now gone through this. Every day that we go without the right for abortion, there will be more of us, more savings accounts drained, more classes and shifts missed, more choices on which bills to skip paying.
Abortion has become almost a point of convenience. While we understand it's unplanned, we get that, but that child deserves an opportunity to be in a loving home.
Senator Mark Wayne Mullen shared the story of his three adopted children and is grateful for the mothers who chose life. He says too often pregnant women are not told their options.
Just give these kids an opportunity to live. They'll bless somebody.
Melissa Oden, who survived a failed medical abortion, says federal resources should be promoting life.
I ask each of you to consider how different women's and children's lives, families, our society could be if just as much money was spent to provide financial assistance, housing, education and employment support, child care, medical and mental health care. This would lead to a new era of women's empowerment.
As we know, the Catholic Church opposes abortion, teaching that all life has dignity and is sacred. Future hearings are planned on pro-abortion bills as Democrats ramp up efforts to keep the issue in the public eye ahead of the November elections. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now in the studio to talk more about that hearing entitled The Assault on Women's Freedoms, How Abortion Bans Have Created a Healthcare Nightmare Across America is Melissa Oden, founder and CEO of the Abortion Survivors Network. Melissa, good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
So obviously, as an abortion survivor, this is really personal to you. What did you think about the hearing today? What was your overall take?
The overall take was, you know, first of all, the very title of the hearing was inflammatory. You know, that's preparation going in. You know what to expect. You know, I overall felt like there was some listening that happened today that I haven't seen otherwise, even amongst, you know, the members of the committee. But by and large, it was what we would typically see in election year, which is they have an agenda and this was part of it.
Yeah. Was there anything that struck out the most to you about today's hearing?
That really, as a pro-life witness, we were the only ones talking about the fact that women deserved resources and support. All you heard from the other side was ban, access, abortion, abortion, abortion.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit more about that. You know, why do you think that a culture of life isn't being promoted more? Why federal dollars aren't put into that?
That was one of the big questions I talked about today. I shared the story that was mentioned in the Washington Post recently. A woman named Evelyn had two medication abortions that failed. She was then provided $12,000 for a late-term abortion in New Mexico, which she didn't have because she was too far along for it to be completed by the abortionists there. And that was really the question that I begged of that committee today is, you know, what would it look like if we spent that kind of funding on education and employment and housing and all the supports that we know women need, medical and mental health care, and the children as well? That's, for me, what women's empowerment truly looks like. So why don't they embrace it? Because I'm pretty sure we need to follow the money.
Yeah. What was the reaction to your testimony today?
Kind of what it usually is. I see crickets. You know, it feels like I'm sort of this white elephant sitting in the middle of the room that nobody wants to talk about. The only thing they did say at the end was that saline abortions, which is the type of procedure I survived, that those abortions aren't performed anymore. That's the response to someone like me in the room as they are talking about women's rights and having control over their bodies.
That's kind of shocking, but you're not used to that. You've been to several of these hearings, and to that point, what do you hope comes from this hearing? Do you think anything at all?
I think that good does come from it. Anytime we can have that discussion, and I think it's bringing together pro-life doctors like Dr. Christina Francis, who was there today, and myself, who can share both the professional side and the personal side. And we really need to share more stories. It takes a lot of courage to stand up in the face of what we experience in those kind of committee rooms. But that's what it's going to take, is more stories to be told, because one story they can try to silence, one voice. But when we start raising our voices together, that becomes an even louder clamor.
Absolutely. And thank you for always sharing your story and for being a witness. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. God bless. And we have a lot more so to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including putting the faith in faithful. Learn more about an initiative aimed at restoring values such as faith and community. And India's prime minister claims victory in an election despite a stunning setback. We'll explain. Leading Catholic Voice issues a call to the faithful for the month of June. It is part of a campaign by Princeton University professor Robert George called Fidelity Month. The initiative is aimed at increasing Americans' belief in the importance of faith, family, patriotism, and community. It began after a 2023 Wall Street Journal study found that there is a major decline in the values that at one time united Americans of all backgrounds. And joining us now is Robert George, founder of Fidelity Month. He is also the director of the James Madison Program in American Ideals and Institutions at Princeton University. Professor George, always so great to see you. So tell us more about why you started Fidelity Month, and what was it about this Wall Street Journal article that really spurred you into action?
Well, Tracy, first, it's so good to be back with you, and how wonderful to be able to talk about something so positive and uplifting this time. Well, it began with negative news, and that was the polling data that showed that Americans' belief in the values that used to unite us across the racial lines and ethnic lines and religious differences and so forth were eroding, the diminution of these values. What are these values? Well, in addition to our constitutional principles, of course, they were faith in God, the importance of fidelity to spouses and to families, and then patriotism, the love of country and community. The one thing that got an increase in support was money. People told the pollsters that they believe very much in the importance of money. So while faith and family and country are diminishing, money's going up. Well, I thought we'd have to do something about this. And so by the power vested in me by absolutely nobody, Tracy, in April of 2023, I declared June, henceforth and forevermore, to be Fidelity Month, when we Americans of all faiths and all ethnicities and all cultural backgrounds and races and so forth would join together to rebuild those principles that used to unite us, to rebuild faith in God, fidelity to spouses and families, and of course, fidelity to our country and communities. And last year, tens of thousands of people joined. This year, hundreds of thousands of people are joining. I hope next year we'll be in the millions of people joining. People can go to fidelitymonth.com and find out what you can do to be part of the Fidelity Month movement.
Well, I think this is absolutely wonderful. So what are some concrete ways that people can take part in Fidelity Month?
Well, first, by rededicating ourselves to the principles of fidelity. Let's be better Christians if we're Christians. Let's be better Jews if we're Jews. Let's be better Protestants if we're Protestants, better Catholics if we're Catholics. Let's give greater devotion to God in our lives. We may go to Mass on Sunday. We may remember to say our prayers, but let's do more in the month of June. Now, we Catholics always celebrate June as Sacred Heart Month, and that's good, and we should continue to do that. Of course, Fidelity Month doesn't compete with devotion to the Sacred Heart in June. But with Fidelity Month, we can join with our fellow citizens of different faiths on the values that we share. And we can do that not only by rededicating ourselves to these important values, but also by proclaiming them to our fellow citizens. A lot of Americans now are on social media. Use the Fidelity Month logo for your social media accounts. A flyer flag, you can go to the Fidelity Month website and figure out how to get obtain our flag or our cap or so forth. At your home or at your community center, fly the flag. Participate in a program, organize a program, have a speaker for Fidelity Month at your parish or at your other church or at your community center. Be in touch with your politicians. Ask them to recognize Fidelity Month, the way that politicians and municipalities and communities recognize other important days and weeks and months, Earth Day, for example, and so forth. We can do that with the principle of fidelity. And if we all get together and do this across the historic lines of division, we're going to make this a great country again.
Yeah. And what has been the feedback so far?
Oh, it's unrelentingly positive. people realize that we need to reunite as Americans. We're so divided. Tracy, all the polling data show that we Americans are polarized in a dangerous way. It's not the first time we've been polarized, but our past experience, including in 1860 to 1864, 65, was not encouraging. So we need to rebuild our unity. We need to stop thinking of each other, despite our important differences, stop thinking of each other as enemies to be destroyed, and restore our understanding of ourselves as civic friends, even on areas in which we disagree. But there are some areas in which a lot of us can agree, whatever our other differences, and those are fidelity to God, fidelity to family and spouses, children, fidelity to our country and community. Those are sources of unity and sources of strength, and we need to get them back, and we can all do our part.
Absolutely, we can. Professor George, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about this and for doing this. We really appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you, Tracy.
Well, in India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi won a historic third term, but his party suffered a stunning setback in a highly contested election. The BJP lost its parliamentary majority, a personal blow to Modi. It means that for the first time, the Prime Minister will be forced to rely on smaller parties in order to form a government. As the results were revealed, the country's stock markets plunged. More than 650 million voters cast their votes over a six-week period. Final figures are not expected until tomorrow. In China and Hong Kong, security and silence marked the 35th anniversary of the Tiananmen Square crackdown. For years, Hong Kong was the only place in China where memorials could take place. Police used a new national security law to make arrests as they dispersed events marking the occasion. In China, the Tiananmen crackdown remains a highly sensitive topic that is heavily censored. And as you can see, it is just another day in the Chinese capital. But back in 1989, it was a much different story. The government ordered the army to end the months-long protest and uphold communist rule. Troops armed with police and tanks fired into the crowds. The final toll is unknown, but hundreds are believed to have died. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, World Day of Migrants. Pope Francis calls out human trafficking in an annual message. We have a report from Rome on what else the Holy Father had to say. Plus, an event in Ireland aims at restoring a spirit of devotion to Our Lady. The Vatican announced its message for the 110th World Day for Migrants and Refugees. The initiative also tackles human trafficking. EWTN Vatican journalist Paola Arriaza has more.
Nigerian-born Blessing Okaidan is a survivor of human trafficking. In its most recent Trafficking in Persons report, the U.S. State Department says Nigeria, quote, does not fully meet the minimum standards for the elimination of trafficking, but it's making significant efforts to do so. Blessing is amongst those joining the fight against slavery in her homeland, for good reason. In 2013, Blessing was the victim of human trafficking. Her captors eventually sent her to Italy. She was able to escape and report the situation to the authorities. From there, the police took her to the home of Sister Rita Jareta, the founder of a home for migrant women who have been victims of modern slavery. Blessing says the move changed her life in more ways than one.
I actually lost my faith. But meeting with her, I was able to sharpen up my faith again. There was a kind of rebirth.
When Blessing shared her story, she received numerous messages from women and girls in a similar situation. This led to a call to action.
Then we started connecting these girls to anti-human trafficking hotlines in Italy, and we make our hearts available because many we are all survivors of sex trafficking, and a lot of us we are singles. Then we make our house available for many of them because anti-human trafficking in Italy, they do not really give urgent response like this, like immediately, because they have to look for space, because the space are really limited.
In 2019, together with other survivors of human trafficking, Blessing founded Weavers of Hope. The nonprofit organization aims to prevent this abuse by educating young girls and offers housing for those who are trying to escape traffickers. She works closely with Catholic officials in her native Nigeria to put an end to trafficking. Her work drew the attention of the Vatican. Yesterday, she took part in the conference in which the Holy Father announced his message for the 110th World Day of Migrants and Refugees.
Today, rather than rejecting and repressing those on the move, we should pay attention to the push and pull factors behind forced migration. If we experienced similar pressures, we would flee too. So let's see the migrants as brothers and sisters, whether they are forced to flee, blocked from entering, or both.
Fighting human slavery is a longtime emphasis for Pope Francis. He has called human trafficking one of the most terrible plagues of our time. The pontiff stressed that migrants are the most vulnerable to human trafficking, as traffickers take advantage of those who have left their homeland to seek a dignified life. And thanks to the Vatican and advocates like Blessing, those migrants have a better chance of avoiding modern slavery as they seek a new home. In Rome, Paola Riaza, EWTN News Nightly.
And finally tonight, around 10,000 people in Ireland recently gathered for a rosary rally. Well, the event took place at the Knock Shrine in County Mayo. One of the highlights was a living rosary with 200 people dressed in color-coded T-shirts. Organizers say the day was meant to bring us back to praying the rosary daily. That is beautiful. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.